Welcome to Truthful Out Radio. Today's date is Friday the 21st of August 2020, and you're listening to me, Sven Longshanks, streaming live tonight at radioalbion.com, but not because we have Dennis Wise with us tonight. Unfortunately, Dennis is still ill. He's not at the stage where he needs to go to the hospital or anything like that, but he is very, very grateful for all the prayers that have been sent his way and the get well soon messages. But we do have a very esteemed author with us tonight. We have the author of Scalp Dance, Germany, Japan, and the Harvest of Hate, Bloody Dawn, The Darkest Dawn, Bleeding Kansas, all sorts of books this man is known for. And tonight we are going to be talking about probably his most famous one, Hellstorm. And the author's name is Thomas Goodrich. Tom, good evening, sir. Thank you very much for coming on the show. How are you doing?
Very good. Thank you so much for having me, Sven. I've heard a lot about you and your program.
Well, I've been listening to interviews that you've been doing for, I don't know, the last probably up to about 10 years, but I haven't heard from you for, I don't know, maybe 2 years now. You haven't been on the scene, but I hear that you've got a newly released box set that you're producing that you'd like to talk about tonight.
Yes, if we could. It's a very important project to me, and it's something that's going on right now that I imagine your listeners would be very interested in. It's the first time this has ever happened. It's my book, Hellstorm, The Death of Nazi Germany, 1944-1947, along with that's my book now, my paperback book, but it's also in tandem with the narration, the audiobook of Hellstorm, done by a gentleman in Great Britain, Paul English, one of the best voices anyone will ever hear narrating anything, much less he could read a telephone book and still have people listening to him. But my book is for sale now with this audiobook, but it's also for sale with the film version, the Hellstorm film version, the DVD. All three of these items are for sale on one website, and that's the first time this has ever happened. You know, prior to this, Sven, those who wanted either the book or the audio book, and certainly the DVD of Hellstorm, had to jump through hoops to find some of these things, because, for instance, the DVD, the Hellstorm movie, the film, has been banned across the entire world, and it's been very difficult to find it. And in fact, most people couldn't find it. Well, now they can. They can go to something called Money Tree Publishing. Money Tree Publishing. It's three words, and they will within a few seconds they'll see what I'm talking about. It's all three of these items. Now you can buy all three at a discount rate. All three items. Or you can buy them individually, one at a time, and they're all reasonably priced. And but this is the first time that's ever happened, so it's extremely exciting. The gentleman who did this, a fellow warrior, is a man named David Gaheri. He has his own publishing house, obviously, Money Tree Publishing, plus several other entities involved with the same publishing house, and he's doing great things. He's providing a home to people who have been banned by Amazon and other giant online organizations who simply don't want to know what they have to say, that is, these books. And so those who get banned by Amazon and other entities can find a home now at Money Tree Publishing with David Gaheri, because he's one of us. He loves the truth. He hates lies. And once you look at the books he's got for sale, you'll see what I'm talking about. So anybody who can, please do visit him, do what you can for him, and just make sure that he's always around, so that entities like Amazon and Barnes & Noble, people like that, cannot get away with this censorship, a blatant censorship, an attempt to stamp out truth. So visit Money Tree Publishing and just make sure that David Gehary is around for a long, long time.
Yeah, we need to support these independent publishers. I have to say, I've heard some of the audiobooks. I'm not sure it was when you were first brought out the Hellstorm audiobook. Maybe there was a chapter of it that was put out, or just some of it. And yeah, I was amazed at the production quality. I got in touch with Paul English to congratulate him on it, because the production quality on it is so good. You can really tell you put a lot of effort into it, a lot of effort into getting the reading of it, the narration of it just right, and then lots of time spent on the audio production afterwards. It's a really, really professional audio book there. And the paperback book that you've got going with it, that's an autographed version as well, is it, I saw?
Yes, they can. A person can order that autographed. I'm not so sure if my signature is so valuable. They can buy it with an autograph, which is an extra $10, by the way, or without the autograph.
Well,
maybe
nice.
Someday we'll meet and I'll sign it then. But by the way, Paul English, yes, no voice could capture the drama and the graphic nature of this book, Hellstorm. No one could do that better than Paul English has done. And to say that he's done an excellent or great job at it, it's Paul agrees with me that you don't use superlatives like that when you're talking about a book like Hellstorm. It's a hideous book, quite honestly. It's a terrible book to read because it tells so many terrible, terrible things that we did to the Germans during the war. And Paul agrees. And by the way, Paul's voice, I could not have found a more perfect voice for this than Paul English. He has the proper tone, the tempo. He understands everything about this. And in a sense, Paul, well, in a great sense, Paul is very similar to myself, because I actually researched the book, of course, and then wrote and rewrote the book and wrote it some more until it became as good as I could possibly do it. And so in a very large sense, Paul English has also lived and breathed this book, for better or worse. I think Paul might agree with me that we had to do this. It was something that had to be done, but it took out a lot out of us. It took a lot out of us, a lot of vim and vigor and life. And, you know, life is not the same anymore after seeing what was done to Germany during World War II, and what was forgotten conveniently forgotten, what was actually censored for the next 70 years. So this book is the first book in 70 years to describe exactly what the German people, the German nation, and most of the people of Europe went through from 1939 to 1945. Now, that said, anyone who hears the subtitle of the book, The Death of Nazi Germany, 1944-1947, will quickly realize that this isn't about the war so much itself. It's about the last year of the war and the first couple of years of peace, so-called peace, which really weren't peace at all. It was simply war by other means. So the book is not so much, although there are segments in there about the fighting, especially on the Eastern Front, and especially, of course, the Americans after D-Day, and when they finally came through France and Belgium and Germany, and what they did when they did come through. So much of the book has to do with, well, I'll mention it right now. Much of the book has to do with so-called peace and how many millions of Germans were killed, deliberately killed, in so-called peace. For instance, the hundreds of thousands of German POWs, helpless, disarmed POWs, were allowed to die from starvation and dehydration and malnutrition and the lack of medicine after the war. Anywhere from 800,000 to 1.5 million, it's been estimated, died. German, helpless German POWs that assumed they were surrendering under the Geneva Convention. They were not. Eisenhower, this despicable, murderous criminal, basically rearranged, juggled the books, so to speak, and stripped these German prisoners from their POW status. That is protected under the Geneva Convention and called them something else. He called them DEFs, disarmed enemy forces. And with that little bit of legerdemain, the man went about his business of killing Germans. He hated Germans with a passion, to a passion. And he regretted that he didn't have enough time to kill even more Germans. And so this was his attempt, his own personal attempt, to kill as many more Germans as he could. And he did a very good job, by the way. It's about things like that. It's also about things like the torture pens operated by the Americans and the Jewish people who were released from some of the concentration camps, or who came over from America and England and operated these fiendish torture pens mostly in Poland, but also in the rest of Germany and places like that. And it was simply death was never the prescription in these torture pens. It was basically life. Keep them alive so they can scream even louder and feel the torture even more. It's about things like that. It's about the nonstop rape that continues throughout Germany after the war. We're not talking about during the war. Yes, of course, when the Russians came through, that is the Red Soldiers, the Mongolians, and when the Americans came through, there was an incredible amount of rapes that went on. And it's been covered up very nicely by the Americans, especially because we know quite a bit about what the Soviet troops did. I mean, that's very well said by people like Alexander Solzhenitsyn and others. We know what was going on there, but we had never really heard about what the Americans were doing. And I've got to tell you, with the release of this most recent book of mine, Summer 1945, I'm of the opinion now that the Americans raped the same brutality, the same ferocity, and virtually in the same type of numbers that the Red Army troops did. In other words, these were armies filled with rapists. It was an army of rapers, quite honestly. But this is going on after the war, much of it after the war. These millions of people being allowed to die or murdered deliberately or raped thrown into torture pens, torture colonies, run by communists, run by Jews, run by everybody who had something against them and wanted to basically punish these people with torture. And they did. There's the starvation, too, that occurred after the war, especially after the war. You know, the German infrastructure had been totally blasted to atoms during the war, in that last year of war, 1944, by almost nonstop bombing of all German cities. Cities that had long, long before lost all appeal as far as to bomb them for their military ability, the ability to create anything of a military nature, the industry. It had been destroyed long ago. And so the bombing continued, especially something called firebombing, during the last year of the war. And there are so many aspects, so many elements of World War II that I knew nothing about, that and I'm sure Paul English knew nothing about either when he began the narration of the book, that had a devastating impact on both of us. We knew war was terrible. We know that all wars, in by its nature, terrible. There's no such thing as a good war. All wars are bad. Some might be hypothetically fought for good reasons. I'm not sure of that either. But there's no such thing as a good war. It's all terrible. It's all bloody. It's all nasty. It's all vicious. It's all vile. It's all vulgar. But this World War II transcends anything we had ever thought of before. There is almost no limit to the depravity of the Allies, that is the Americans and the British and the Soviet Union and the French. It seems there is no limit, there is no end to the amount of depravity that they want to heap upon the Germans. And that, for the most part, is because of this high price of propaganda, this propaganda that started in roughly, before 1939, before the war even started itself, the anti-German propaganda, basically transforming the German people perhaps the best people in the world, quite honestly. Even to this very day, they've got the DNA that is probably part of the best DNA on Earth. But they're trying to transform, and they did a very good job of with the propaganda of transforming to basically dehumanizing the Germans. And they suddenly become not really humans. They become despicable, murderous, bloody beasts that started World War One, and many people in Great Britain and elsewhere would agree that they started it because it was virtually the same propaganda, anti-German propaganda, then as later on in World War II. And so it was so much easier just to step up the pace of the propaganda in World War II. And you had so many people who believed it from World War One now more than believed it in World War II. And that's unfortunately where a good part of the British fighting forces came, the American fighting forces, the French, and perhaps even the Soviet Union. And so you've got these 18-year-olds with rifles who believe now that the German, especially the so-called Nazi, which suddenly took it up a new level, is something worthy of only destroying and killing and finishing off. And that propaganda continued. In fact, it not just continued, but it elevated to a degree that it's just hard to understand the nature of this entire war. And I'm not sure I do even to this point. You know, I wrote books, a book, Hellstorm, and I wrote another book, Summer 1945. I'm an expert on those two books, but I'm not an expert. I'm not an expert on World War II. And so some of these things are still boggling to me, puzzling to me. I'm not sure. I was in the military once myself, the American military. And I also met people who seemingly had no conscience, that is, my fellow troops. I would like to say, now, I'm far from perfect. I'm very imperfect. But I do have a soul. I do have a conscience. And I could not do what I saw done myself. I could never do that. And I certainly couldn't rape a helpless woman. I don't care how badly I want sex. And yes, I'm totally heterosexual and I have a normal sex drive. But to take it from someone like that violently, I could never do that, ever. And there's I can do many things in this world that aren't good. That's for sure, because I've done them before. But these things that I'm describing in Hellstorm in Summer 1945, I know a little bit about war, and I know a little bit about pain and suffering and death, and much of this stuff I could never adhere to or subscribe to. So the book is both books, but especially the one we're talking about right now, Hellstorm. It's a book that those who have read it, and most of the people on Earth have not read it, by the way, and most of the people in the languages that it's been translated into, German, French, Portuguese, Spanish, and soon Lithuanian and other languages, they have not read it either, unfortunately. I would like to see the entire Earth read this book, understand this book, and then act upon this book and prevent anything like this ever happening again. I would like to see laws passed against and criminal prosecution against people who knowingly and willingly put out false, ugly, vile, vicious propaganda, propaganda that get people killed. You know, bullets and bombs and bayonets, they kill once. Propaganda kills again and again and again. I would almost like to see criminal prosecution of anybody who knowingly and willingly propagates this sort of terrible stuff, because it gets not just soldiers killed. It gets innocent women and children, old people, animals killed. It gets nations utterly destroyed and cultures crushed. But to say that I am living Hellstorm, yes, that's not an exaggeration. This book had such a profound impact on me that, no, I'll never be the same. And neither will Paul English, who narrated the book. You cannot be the same. In fact, reviewers and people who have read this book, they often say things like, you're going to be a different person after you read this book. You cannot help it. It's a life-altering book. It's something that will change not only the way you look at World War II, but the way you look at the world. It has that kind of quality. And the best I can say for this, Sven, is I do consider myself a pretty good writer. I've been doing it for about 30 years, so I should be. But it's the way I treated this book, I think, that resonates best with readers, people who have read the book. I tried to be as bipartisan and neutral throughout the entire book as I possibly could. Of course, I've got prejudice and bias in me. There's no doubt about that. I've got plenty of it. But a history book is no place for a historian to parade that bias, because if they do, and I can tell you, I could name some names right now of people who do parade their bias in certain history books about World War II. By doing that, you become little more than a publicist yourself, or a propagandist at worst. And that's no place. We should teach people. We should educate people. We should give them the truth. They'll make up their mind what they like and what they don't like. And so be as bipartisan and neutral as you possibly can in writing any history book, and let it go at that. You've done your best. Let them decide what they want. Let them come to the banquet table and say, I believe this. I don't believe this. This sounds logical. It makes sense. My instinct tells me it's correct. So that's the approach I took with the book. But even more so, I did something I had been doing in other books prior to Hellstorm for years. And that was allowing the people themselves to tell the story as much as possible, allowing them to, in their own words, from various journals, diaries, whatever it is that they eventually told their tale in, to get as much of that as possible and let the reader hear their words. Now, they might, some reviewer may not like me. He may have problems with me, with my face, with my politics. But it's very hard to criticize and try to destroy someone who's telling what it felt like to be raped by 100 men in 1 week in their own words. It's pretty hard to be hard with that woman or call her a liar. Nobody makes up things like this. Or what it's like for a mother in Hamburg or Berlin or Stuttgart or whatever German town it is to see her two children burned to death in a firebombing raid. She couldn't rescue them in time. And to see them running through the streets like living blue torches, trying to stop the terrible agony on their bodies. Her describing that, you might call the book propaganda. You might call it whatever you want. It's hard to do that, though, when the book is in the words of the people themselves describing what they saw, what they felt, what they heard. And that's the way I treat this book and the following book, Summer 1945, in the words of the people themselves. In this case, it's the victims of World War II. It's the losers. It's the vanquished. This is not the victor's account. We've got plenty of books, plenty of movies, Hollywood-type movies, plenty of documentaries telling us what the victors want us to think about World War II. And in many cases, they're outright lies. They're bold, outright exaggerations. They are not true, quite honestly. It's literally not true. But that's what happens when you lose a modern war. You lose it all the way, not just the bombs and the bullets. You lose it in the words, in the movies, in the books. You lose it that way also, until eventually you've got a parody. You've got a caricature of what of the losing side. In other words, they're all evil. They all need to be destroyed. And that's the program that's been going on for the last 70 years and continues to this very day, especially from places like Hollywood, the American media, the BBC, people like that. But as long as we keep repeating our mistakes, and that's what we would do if we could listen to nothing but the winners of the war, we're going to continue to make these mistakes throughout history, all time, because we'll keep doing the same things to the same types of people. People we don't like, people who lose a war. Call them anything we want. They're terrible, terrible Nazis. They kill lots of Jews. They make experiments on people during the war themselves, do terrible things to the victims. And we are expected to believe all that. And most of us do, unfortunately. Most of us believe the winner's version of this history. But that's why it's so important to have a book like Hellstorm out there, or Summer 1945, which talks also about Japan, Germany and Japan, both of them. That's the reason we need accurate, annotated history from the people who lose the war. We need to have that so that there's two sides to this war, three or four sides, but more than just the one side, the victor's side. And until we get more of that, Hellstorm's not enough. Summer 1945 is not enough. We need more writers out there, more historians willing to go after this and tell the loser's side of this story. For instance, in the Middle East right now, I know what's going on over there because I knew what went on in World War II. Much the same thing is going on in the Middle East, quite honestly. It's been going on since 2001. We need a great history coming out of there about what's happened to the losers of those wars. And it's not going to be the flag-waving nonsense that we have right now in the U.S. and the U.K. and places like that. It's going to be, well, for instance, let me give you an example here. I don't think anybody out there can forget the images that we saw several years ago, 10 years ago, from Abu Ghraib, the Iraqi prison, where Americans were torturing their captives there with dogs, with electricity, with sexual sadism. We remember that. But that's just one image, one photograph that comes out of that, so to speak. This is going on many, many other places. To this very day, things like that are still occurring over there. And lo and behold, this was actually got a rolling start in World War II, this type of torture, these torture pens, where, yes, our people, the same people, our neighbors, the people we've lauded and the people that we have celebrated as being fighting for our liberty, fighting for our freedom, doing God's work, destroying an infidel enemy. This is still going on. And the massacres and the starvation and the rape, that's also going on. How do I know? I'm not there, nor have I been there when the fighting has been in progress. But I don't need to be. I know what happened in World War II. That's what's so important, too, about Hellstorm, is that you can't understand what we're going through right now. Not in just the Middle East, not just in war, but in our private lives, in the public lives, in the streets, the riots in the streets. You can't understand what this is all about unless you can understand what went on in World War II.
How easy it is to get people to behave like depraved animals just through propaganda. One of the things that really surprises me, actually, or I guess it shouldn't, is the fact that you were saying that the video itself has been censored because the laws are about not glorifying Nazism or not talking about gas chambers. And the book doesn't do that. The book talks about horrible things being done to the Germans, the guilty party. Under what laws could they use to try and ban that? It seems to me as if this is one way of getting around the censorship would be about subjects like this. And as you say, it's so important because I think this is something that maybe our listeners forget. I mean, occasionally we do talk about the wars that are going on in the Middle East, the unrest in Syria, especially what happened in Libya. But to think that the same that went on after World War II could have been going on over there, I mean, that is a really shocking thought. To think that, because that, you know, that means it didn't just happen after the Second World War. It didn't just happen to Germany, but it could be happening in Syria. It could have been happening in Libya. It could be happening in Yemen. All these places, and we don't know anything about it. And it goes all the way back to not knowing what happened at the end of the Second World War. These are just some of the thoughts that come to mind from you talking about all of that, Tom.
Yeah, I agree with you on that. But I assure you, it is going on. War has not improved one bit. In fact, it's gotten worse because we have ignored World War II. We have ignored the other side of the picture. And that's what Hellstorm is all about. The idea of Kyle's movie, Kyle Hunt made the movie Hellstorm. I helped to the best of my ability, but Kyle did almost all of it. Yes, it is a devastating movie. It, I think the movie is roughly an hour and a half long. And yes, Kyle will admit that there's no way you can tell the entire book in an hour and a half movie, but you can do the, you can get pretty close. And Kyle has with his imagery and the films he's using. There should not really be an issue about the movie. But the fact that he's doing what the book does, showing what the Allies did to the Germans during and after the war. And that in itself is enough for the Jewish censors around the world and their willing Steppenfetchits to automatically, well, they know what it's all about. It's showing the other side of the war, but they tell the individuals out there, this is by a neo-Nazi, this is Nazi propaganda, it's another blah, blah. But the fact is, it's not. It's verifiable. It's provable. This is not something that we invented, just created out of the ether to satisfy our own terrible nature. This is truth. This is, and it's, you can censor it because you can. You've got the power. You've got the willing people out there who will do it. For instance, we're going through this nonsense throughout the white world right now, especially about this COVID-19 and the need to all of us to act and think alike. We know, Sven, I'm telling you things you already know, but it probably bears repeating, though, is that this is all fake fraud. This is all something that's been done to see if we will or if we won't adhere to what they're saying, their directives, to wear the mask, to have the proper distance between people. Nonsense, utter nonsense. And we all know, anybody who's been following this at all, anyone who's curious enough to start investigating on their own, know that this so-called pandemic has been no more dreadful, no more destructive, no more murderous than the flu. And there's so many other things that's been proven in this by expert medical professionals, people who know what in the hell they're talking about. And yet this continues because it can continue, because they've got the power, they've got the media, they've got these willing individuals who will lie in front of the cameras, and those who it's an attempt to see how far they can take us. And unfortunately, they're probably pretty satisfied with what they've seen. Most of the people, yes, this is the case it's always been. Most of the people will gladly go along with anything just to get along. They don't want any problem in their life. They don't want any disruption in their personal lives and public lives, and certainly don't want to lose their jobs. Who can blame them on that? But this has gotten to a level now where it's pathological, and these individuals who willingly wear the mask, who willingly keep the distance of 6 feet or whatever it is, whatever they make it, or who will willingly get in line to test for this so-called pandemic, or who will be more likely to just stand in line and receive this venom, this serum that they're supposedly developing to cure COVID-19. I'm not worried about it at all. I'm an old guy, too. Old people should be scared of this. I'm not a bit. Not a bit scared of it. I'm so scared, though, of the ease with which they convinced so many millions of our people to simply wear a chain, a slave chain, and just go along to get along. This we've always had these people among us, and unfortunately, they are subscribing to this entire indoctrination approach. And anyway, that's another story in itself, and I'll get off that because that's but yeah, censorship, again, you say, how can I go back to World War II and say it began with that. Well, it did. I think anybody who stops and starts searching, starts thinking through this through. Yes, that war was absolute, total, utter. And they had an entire, the greatest people on earth, they had suddenly had them under absolute lockdown, absolute control. They could do anything and everything they wanted to the German people, and they did. To this very day, they did. And that's what's going on right now. You've got a supine, obedient German people, what's left of them, willingly accepting these hordes of dark people coming in from all over the world to live off the bounty of their sweat and blood to build a beautiful, great nation. And these people are coming in to suck the lifeblood out of them. They're a little better than parasites, vampires, but they're there, and they're still coming in. And they were allowed to come in by the gatekeepers, by the individuals who hate Germany so much that they want to see it utterly destroyed this time. And they're going to probably succeed unless we can wake up enough people in Europe, starting with Germany and Sweden and places, and the UK, of course. But anyway, again, I do digress, but people might ask, how can you possibly point to World War II as a springboard for what's going on right now? Very easily, by the way. It wouldn't take any effort.
It's media manipulation, isn't it? Like media magicians, yes. And the way they can pull the wool over people's eyes. I guess it was never so powerful as it was at the time of the Second World War. Everywhere had newspapers, we had television, we had newsreels on the screens, the cinemas were just starting to take off, and they could blanket out everything that was coming from Germany, apart from maybe the Lord Haw-Haw that was broadcasting his radio to Britain. But that must have been just about it. So nobody could actually see what was really going on in Germany. They were just getting these false representation of it and being told what monsters they were. And then when it came to the end of the war, they believed all of that, and they'd been brought up into a bloodlust, I guess. And I mean, you're researching it, you're looking at it, and you're finding that it's leaving you numb researching it. But part of you must think, well, these were people just like myself that actually fell for this propaganda. People like you, people like me that actually fell for it. This is the thing that really gets to me, because we like to think, well, we know this now, we've seen all this, but they were just normal people that fell for that. Soviets,
yes.
Americans.
And, I've got to say, Sven, too, also, I'm not above reproach in this. As a young man, let's say in my teens and 20s, not so much in my 30s. That's when I started maturing, you might say. But yes, I fell for so much baloney here in America. I loved this nation, the United States. I loved the flag. I was proud of it. I believed almost everything the news readers would tell me. This was during the Vietnam period, and I believed virtually everything they told me back when I was not thinking. Now, the good news is I was born curious. Eventually, I allowed that curiosity to run loose, and that's where I started learning and gaining and understanding and suffering, too, you might say, suffering from the truth I found out. And I had a radical transformation in my life once I began to see what really happened, not what they told me happened, not what I believed happened, what really happened. And yes, I criticize the people who willingly go along willy-nilly and without asking any questions, especially the older people. Let's say older in the sense of older after 35 and up, and who still will refuse to show a spark of curiosity. Is this really true, what they're telling me? We've got the ability right now with the internet to, all the knowledge that has ever come onto the earth is available right now with a finger tap away. So there's no excuse. Before, yes, back in the bad old days when I had to travel to libraries and go down in musty catacombs, archives, to find the material I did find for Hellstorm, it took a little tougher animal to go after that then. But this is not that now. In fact, summer 1945, my most recent book and probably my last book, I did most of that online. It was available, finding out about what really happened to the Japanese. I won't go any further than that, but that was made easy. History, the research, the writing of it, because of this wonderful modern miracle called the internet. But today there's no excuse to be ignorant, to wander around and believe everything the television tells you. There is absolutely no excuse except fear, of course. And I would think the people right now who are fearing this COVID-19, this of getting it, I digress a bit, but my God, we're all going to die at some point in this life. Why be so afraid, so fearful suddenly about a cold, for God's sakes? A cold that's no worse, or in fact, it's been proven to be even less deadly than the common flu. Why suddenly are so terrified about your life? But anyway, in other words, I'm asking everybody to just more or less man up with this thing. Quit being so terrified of such stuff. But there's no excuse now. You can find hundreds of opposite views about COVID-19 just with a curious click of the button. It'll take you to some of the most incredible medical professionals that will give you their opinion on this.
That's what they're trying to get rid of, isn't it?
Unfortunately, not enough people don't have the curiosity.
That's what they're trying to get rid of, is other people's opinions, particularly the medical opinions. I mean, they're so hot on that. They're even removing videos that Donald Trump's son has tweeted, videos that Breitbart put out that were the most watched video on Facebook that day, with all these doctors and medical professionals that are talking about it. And they're just censoring all of it and just using this excuse of, oh, it contradicts what the World Health Organization say. And what the World Health Organization says changes from month to month. I mean, the power has really gone to their head with this media, with the propaganda they can put out, with the way that they can blackmail politicians as well. I mean, that's a really important one, that they'll just refuse to give up on a subject, and they'll keep pushing that subject until the politicians cave in, because they just can't talk about anything else. I mean, the power of the media is just, it's so wicked. It's so evil. But one thing that, I do have a question about is, how did you first get into doing this? What made you think, I want to research what happened to the Germans after the war? Mm-hmm. And you're saying there that you went into the archives to go and do that. I mean, did you have to go to a special library, or can you tell me a bit about that, when you first got this idea to look into this?
Mm-hmm. Sure. I've been writing for roughly 30 years. I've been doing research, though, at least for 40. I graduated from college with a degree in history, and so I have a real love, a fondness for history. I really do love history. I love honest, accurate history. I love verifiable, truthful history that you can prove. I don't like reading just somebody's spin on something. But I've got to say, I had a controversial bone in my body all my life, and I know I'm gifted with with curiosity. I've got plenty of that. But when I began writing books, the 1980s. In fact, I began getting them published in the 1990s. It took quite a while, but I've always had this nose for controversy. Beginning with the American Civil War, my first great passion was that. I'm sure all your listeners know a little bit about that, the North versus the South, the Union versus the Confederacy, 4 years of terrible, terrible fratricidal bloodshed. I've always been interested in that because, quite honestly, we again have this business of the winners writing the history. And the North wrote the history because they won. And it's the South has been vilified ever since that period. That's over 100 years. And so I knew there were some areas there that needed to be covered from the perspective of the losers of that war. That is the Southerners, the Confederacy, the rebels. And so my first four books were on the Civil War. Even the beginning, pre-Civil War, there was a pre-Civil War in America that occurred in the 7 years preceding the actual outbreak of Civil War. And so I started with those books, and when I say controversy, this is very mild, of course, very mild controversy compared to World War II. However, it fascinated me, and I wanted to correct some things in history that I knew were wrong about the Civil War, the American Civil War, especially the opinions of the South, the losers of the war, and how terrible they were. Even to this very day, they're vilified and denigrated. You can see on TV tearing down the Southern flag, the Confederate flag, tearing down their monuments. So this is continuing even 100 years after the war. But that was my first book. And then something else that came to me, and I wasn't determined to do something about it. Again, this controversial bone in my body, this need to correct history, was about the American Indian Wars. Ever since roughly 1965, there has been an attempt by Jewish Hollywood to basically paint the American red man, the American Indian, as some sort of benign protector of the universe, someone who is one with God and nature, is a peaceful, pastoral individual who wouldn't hurt a flea. And it was only when the white people came onto the scene, entered America and crossed the Mississippi River and then moved west, building homes and railroads, things like that. It was only when the white people showed up that they began killing the Indians wantonly, just for the fun of it in many, many cases. And they were always the most devilish looking individuals in these Jewish Hollywood movies. And by the way, in many of the books too, written by academics who are worried about their tenure, of course, and worried about keeping their jobs, so they have to write what is expected of them. Well, this got to me very much because I knew something about the American Indian Wars. I was raised in the West, so I just by osmosis came in contact with it, and I knew some things that I wanted to address. And so I went to work on a book called Scalp Dance: Indian Warfare on the High Plains, 1865 to 1879. And my mission is to tell a story, tell the history as honestly and as accurately, with as much dispassion as possible. And the way to do that is basically annotate it, to research the subject thoroughly, and then be as accurate as you possibly can with the source material. Not taking sides. That's hard because, like I say, I've got bias, like I mentioned, I've got prejudice. But a history book is no place to parade your prejudice. And so you tell it as accurately and honestly, objectively as you possibly can. And I did that job with the Indian War book, Scalp Dance. And people, reviewers, they say, in fact, I actually published with the mainstream press on this because it was something very needed. And there was none of the normal propaganda involved, not on either side, not on the white side, not on the red side. Prior to this, there were books being published right now that the Indians were always the heroes. And in the movies, they were always the heroes. They were wonderful, great people, harmless. But I told a different story in the book Scalp Dance. I'll let the people do the talking, whether they be soldiers or Indians or whiskey traders or women, housewives moving west, farm wives or soldiers' wives. I let them all do the storytelling. And they described it very well, by the way. And it's a book that's still out there and it's still, people still love to read it. But that's where I cut my teeth on this entire thing because I had always been a student of war, and World War II, of course, is our war. It's the war that we Europeans know something about, and because it's almost impossible not to know something about World War II, even to this very day. And I knew enough that some of the things that were never being said in the history books, I knew had to be said. And that is that there are two sides to a war, the winner's and the loser's side. And invariably, the losers always get the short end of the stick. If there's anything at all mentioned, it's always, well, you know, the usual spin. They've got to say, well, they deserved what they got. Yes, they did, were slaughtered indiscriminately, but they got what they deserved. That type of nonsense. That's propaganda to me. And so I cut all that kind of silly nonsense out and basically just told the story the way it came to me, in the words of the people themselves. Hope I'm answering your question here.
Yes, you are, yeah.
Yeah, it's, to me, I love writing history. Maybe that's not quite fair to me. Writing is tough, I'll be honest with you. Even when you've written 15 books, it's still rather tough, especially the organization of a book. But it's
did you find when you finished doing Scalp Dance and you moved on to doing Hellstorm and you're starting to look into the archives there and you're starting to find what the witnesses had to say there, did you find that that changed your opinion? Did it make you more interested in wanting to find out whether the Germans were innocent in this war? Did you know anything about National Socialism beforehand, or were you coming at it straight from this was the worst ever war and I just want to find out what happened at the end of it?
What happened there? More the latter than the former, what you said there. Yes, I thought I knew quite a bit about World War II, and I found out I really didn't. But I was determined to write the loser's version, their perspective of World War II. I was utterly startled at what I found, as Paul English was also when he did the narration, utterly startled by the degree of hatred for the Germans in the propaganda. I'm not talking about the soldiers fighting. I'm talking about the propagandists and the politicians and the generals also. I was stunned by, well, for instance, my parents loved President Dwight D. Eisenhower. I like Ike. They voted for him. I loved him too growing up because they loved him. I didn't realize that he was one of the greatest mass murderers in history. This gentleman that we voted for American president, a vicious individual that hated Germans. In fact, he said, I hate the Germans. I really do hate the Germans. That's what he wrote to his wife. I hate Germans. I had no idea of simple things like that. I had no idea that he hated them so much that he allowed about a million of them to die. To just die of starvation and dehydration, and in many cases, outright murder, to kill as many as he possibly could. I had heard some things. I'd heard a number of things. I'm not a student of World War II, as I mentioned, but I'd heard some of the terrible things about the Russian or the Soviet army raping on a massive scale, millions of women raped. Multiple times. We're not talking about a rape in a dark corner. We're talking about a rape by a company of soldiers, 100 soldiers in line to rape a woman on a street in Germany in broad daylight so that everybody could see. We're talking about things like that. Trust me, I had never in my... I've got a vivid imagination, but apparently it wasn't nearly good enough for the research of this book. And so, yes, it was each day was a shock value. I'd go to these archives, go to the libraries. I've got a little dog barking. Hopefully he's not disrupting everybody there. But
that's fine.
I would, unlike the modern research now, online, much of it can be done. Back then, I had to go to the libraries myself. And do the research. In fact, there was a couple of great sources I found that helped me throughout the entire book. They were had been put together by priests after the war, when they could do it safely, and had interviewed many, many people, especially women victims of rape. And so that came in extremely handy for this book. But yes, it's very hard. It's grueling type of work. People think, well, it's not work if you're researching in a library. Maybe it isn't work. I've done some of that myself, but it's it's just something that just bears down on you, and it hurts your back and your eyes and virtually everything else. But I also solicited. I would go to various German American clubs here in the United States, where a lot of people, a lot of older people too, would go to speak German, to talk to Germans, fellow Germans in this new country, America. And I would join these clubs, and I would make little announcements, or someone would make announcements for me that I'm doing a book on World War II about the Germans themselves. And I got quite a few individuals who were not afraid to come forward, talk to me, and we would set up dates, and I'd meet them in various places, and we'd talk. I'd have a tape recorder, and I would get their story. And it's, let me say this, I never did speak with a woman who admitted to being raped. Never. That was something, even to this very day, that was so shameful and disgusting that they wouldn't even own up to it now. However, I do know this, that a majority, in fact, I can't make any sweeping generalization on this, but I can say that a majority of German women were raped, whether it was on the Eastern or the Western front. And it just depends where they were at and the various officers who were in charge. But when I'm talking about rape, I'm not talking about what most people think about rape, something secret, hidden, dark, in a corner somewhere, one person, one woman, one rapist, one victim. We're talking rape on such an incredible, massive scale, no one could even believe this. Unless they read the book Hellstorm and or see the movie or listen to the narration, then they will believe it, because it's annotated. It's got the source material. It's got the person who's telling me these things. If I had it to do over again, well, number one, there's not enough life in me to do another book like that, like Hellstorm, because it truly did suck the life out of me, knowing these things, knowing that the human being is capable of doing these things. So I could never do another book. Thank God I was young enough to actually persevere through the research of this book and the writing and the rewriting of this book. It is that debilitating, at least it was to me. Maybe I'm just oversensitive or over-emotional. But it was that devastating to me that, I can say this, and perhaps some of my enemies will say, good, you don't deserve to. But I've never been able to sleep since writing that book, finishing that book, just virtually living. Well, I don't think I need to mention any more of that, because I think anybody out there who's heard even what we've been talking about now can probably relate to that. There was some similar accounts in the Scalp Dance book, the Indian War book, because, yeah, there's an entire chapter in there devoted to Indians raping white women and how it was a project, more or less. It was never singular. It was always multiple. And after the rapes occurred, the woman was transformed into the tribal prostitute. And she had to do even more, had to allow herself to be raped even more times, over and over and over. So this went on throughout her entire captivity. As long as she had her looks, she would be raped. There's no question about that. But it also, in the Hellstorm book, that is one component that continues throughout the book. It never really abates. It never decreases or diminishes. It continues to go on even into the so-called peace years. Yes, of course, women were turned into prostitutes too. Don't forget, the Germans had no power whatsoever left to them. They couldn't decide. They had no laws. They had no judges. They had no people who would stand up for them. This was total defeat in a total war. And to this very day, we're still living much of that.
Unconditional anyway, surrender, wasn't it?
You have more questions, I know, and I better shut up for a while and allow you to.
That's okay. I was going to say, it was unconditional surrender, wasn't it? They had to just go along with whatever they were told they had to do. The people that you spoke to must have been so pleased that you were writing this book and you were taking an interest and that you were going to tell their story. They must have been really pleased to hear that. And I know my listeners have been very pleased to hear from you today, Tom. I'm hoping that you'll come back and maybe we can talk some more about this, but we're going to have to close the show now, really. We've been going for an hour. Do you just want to say the name of the publishing house again, where people can buy your book from, before we finish?
Yes. First of all, my book Hellstorm, all my books are out there. I haven't been censored. I haven't been thrown out. They're out there. But this most recent Hellstorm edition is published by Money Tree Publishing. It's a great organization. It's one of us. It's our people. It's our people who care about truth and honesty and lack of censorship. And it's available there, Money Tree Publishing, the book, the audiobook, and the video, the DVD film. It's out there. And by the way, I would be happy to come back whenever you'd like, and we could talk perhaps about summer 1945, which is Germany, Japan, and the harvest of hate. And it talks even more about this. In fact, it's yet another terrible, tremendous revelation I learned from the research of that book. And we can go into that more. And I think, well, it's an interesting story in itself, the writing of the story. So
that would be fantastic. That would be really good. Well, thank you very much for coming on today, Tom. Thank you very much, listeners, for listening. I will be back next week with more Truthful Out Radio for you. And, of course, we do hope you have a great weekend ahead of you.